Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
I am feeling heartbroken and disgusted. Women deserve so much better than this, and we should not be able to tell them what rights or what choices they have to do with their body. Their health, their choices, their privacy, their rights. We shouldn't be going backwards on this. That's how I'm feeling.
That is fair. And I'm right there with you. Like, it doesn't make sense. One, like, that just shouldn't be, I mean, speaking as a man, like, that really shouldn't be our choice for very obvious reasons. But beyond that, like, it would be one thing if that's a decision that's being made while the infrastructure of the country is stronger in terms of like childcare or education or housing or any of that stuff. If the, you know, the just how adoption is handled in this country, like if that entire system wasn't what it was right now, then you still disagree, but then you can at least try to talk yourself into it. The fact that all of that is a mess right now, in addition to taking the choice out of women's hands, it doesn't sit well with me. It shouldn't sit well with anyone. And I'm right there with you. Like, it's not right. I don't think that's right. And I echo your sentiment at the top. Women deserve a lot better than what this country is giving them right now. In a multitude of areas. But over I went ranting on my timeline when the decision dropped. I don't want to turn that into this again, but it's a mess. It's a mess. And we should be doing a lot better as a country.
We should. Help us all. But Nikias, you look fantastic.
Oh no.
For the folks out there.
Here we go.
Nikias got a new Mac. I don't even know if I can say that out loud, but it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, he got a box on Twitter. It's fine.
He got a pair computer.
Wow.
And this camera, folks, this man is in 1080p, 8K. Got a fresh haircut. This room looks different than I've ever seen it. I didn't even know it was a room.
Wow.
He's got LED lights all of a sudden.
LED, wait a minute. Now we're gassing it. I don't know about that part.
Hey, man. Just trying to get like you, though.
Oh, brother. He says from one of the six screens that he is using to record the podcast. But it's fine, though. I do have a new computer. Tweeted at the beginning of the month, like, hey, I want to splurge on something. And I got a new computer. I've been doing some streaming. Follow me on Twitch if you haven't been already.
All that big, big plug for the Twitch now. Goodness, hey, man, gracious. On, this is we here.
Come. Hey, we had to.
Let me send a text while I can.
Let me see. Oh, brother.
See if it still goes through.
Is this what we're on right now? You are unbelievable. Anyway, speaking of unbelievable, let's flow into a discussion about the Phoenix Mercury. Let's kick off with some W talk. Because there has been a little bit of roster turnover in Phoenix. Tina Charles, who is having a fantastic season, or was for the Mercury. She is no longer a member of the Mercury, and it has been described as a contract divorce. Before even getting into like the takeaway from the release and the signing, which we'll also get into, have you ever heard of that transaction being described as a contract divorce? That is my first time hearing that.
It was a rare one, but I'm assuming it's like a language deal. Splits whatever they had up, I guess, maybe. I'm not sure.
I just don't know how that works. I would love to. I'm just not smart enough for that. Like, I would love to know what the difference between a contract divorce and like a contract buyout is, because I would imagine that there has to be at least some similarities here. But
trust me, buddy, they're all similar.
All right, basketball. Woo! We are here. Anyway, Tina Charles and the Phoenix Mercury are no more. Charles will be signing with the Seattle Storm. What do you make of the fit? I have thoughts, but I want to pass the mic to you first.
Is it confirmed she signed up the Storm? Doesn't she have to clear waivers still?
She does have to clear waivers.
So allegedly, she's signing with the Storm. Look at me being a journalist.
There we go. All indications are pointing to.
There we go. Yeah. The Storm are locked in on, right?
There we go.
That's get my big Woj. Well, for one, the departure felt like Tina Charles wanted to win, and they wasn't doing much winning. Yeah. And so look around. I came here to win. Hopefully Brittany Griner's okay and she comes home soon. A lot of that was out of the control of the Mercury, but the season has gone sideways. And if we're not winning, I came here to win. I got to go. Mm-hmm. And Mercury were like, okay.
Right.
So I that part of it, it kind of made sense in that way. But as far as the fit goes with potentially Seattle, it's going to be interesting because that is an opportunity to win. And Tina Charles will make them better because even here, Tina Charles is still a certified bucket, a really, 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 really good player. Mm-hmm. And that's a Storm team that could really use that offensive punch. If you're telling me you got Sue Bird, Jewel Lloyd, Stewie, and Tina Charles, that's a lot to deal with. Especially if you stagger them now, the quote-unquote second unit or bench lineups look a little bit different. So yeah. If that's the move, I totally get why Seattle would get it. Total sense of urgency to try and win this ring, try and, you know, end this era out on a high note. Mm-hmm. How does the fit work would be my question. And then mainly, it seems silly because I know where you're going to go with this.
Okay.
I don't know if Tina Charles, Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer, looking for a ring, asking her to come off the bench doesn't make the most sense to me. Sorry. But Ezzie is hooping. And so you've got some ways to try and make that work. But if you add Tina Charles to what you have already, you're doing some good things. I'm sorry.
I'm with you. And that is kind of where I'm going. Like, the fit makes sense. It's odd to say that a Storm team needs more offense, but they kind of need more offense. And having someone like Tina Charles, who, as you said, is a certified bucket, can still bully folks on the block, can finesse folks on the block, can pop out for threes as well. Having that kind of weapon in the front court would just make the Storm unfair if they're able to hum and they're able to figure out the fit. I do wonder where they go with the starting lineup. Tina Charles obviously has the pedigree, and she's still very good. But also, Ezzie is playing extremely well. And just the
Do I have to bring the bit to the W? I don't want to bring the bit to the W.
What's the bit?
Let me check her age real quick.
Oh, it's not. Oh, come on, man. It ain't that. It ain't that at all. We talked about the Tina Charles signing when she signed with Phoenix. I was like, hey, wait, this is dope. I have no bad things to say about Tina Charles. But I will say, like, Ezzie is playing well, and just what they ask Ezzie to do defensively and how well she's performing defensively, that's where I'm just like, okay, I get the pedigree. But also, Ezzie's pretty important. And considering the issues that the Storm have had with their second unit, like, it makes sense to me, at least from just a purely basketball set. It makes sense for me, like, Tina Charles be a super six woman. Obviously, that doesn't mean if she comes off the bench, she can't finish games. She still can. But I would keep the starting lineup intact. That's what I would do.
Is there any way I can convince you maybe this unlocks Ezzie playing with the second unit?
I can see the argument.
Just throwing it out there. They're going to stagger great players if that happens either way. So yeah. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be able to figure it out. Again, that's just kind of where I'm jumping into it with, especially with Tina joining midseason. Like, I think it's an easier case to make for me if she signed with Seattle in the offseason. Then it's just, okay, we're going to start here and then we figure the rest out. Because Ezzie showed defensive slashes last year too. But, like, you could really make the case, like, no, just unlock her with the second unit, let her be the change of pace big, wreck stuff, and if she's playing well enough, let her close out some games, whatever, whatever. The fact that we've gotten this start from Ezzie, that's where I'm hesitant to where you're adding Tina Charles in midseason. It's like, okay, here, you're the starter. Like, I wonder what that dynamic is like.
So does it give you Jordan Poole, Klay Thompson vibes?
Kind of. I don't think Tina's like that.
No, like, Tina's isn't it. A legend. But I'm just thinking, as far as you found something.
Yeah.
Now you have something else. How do you balance both? That's my only thought process.
Yeah, I got you. Like, I see the parallel there. It's funny, like, it's kind of reversed now. Like, Ezzy is kind of the... I'm struggling to figure out... I'm struggling to remember what the word is. But, like, Ezzy was there first instead of Tina versus the inverse where Jordan Poole got drafted in and Klay was already a legend there. The seniority, I guess, is what I'm looking for.
That's still advantage, Tina Charles.
I got you. I feel, again, she has the pedigree and she's still very good. Like, I totally understand that part. But, oh, go ahead.
Okay. No, I was going to say, do you totally understand what's going on with the Aces?
I am trying to. It's fun. We were talking a little bit pre-show and you were, you know, twisting the knife and such, as the Aces have started to struggle as of late. They still had the best record in the W, but just a half game lead over the Chicago Sky, who they lost to in literally historic fashion last Tuesday. If you're on the wrong end of the biggest comeback win in WNBA history, that is not a not a great sign. And if you follow that up with an overtime loss to the Washington Mystics, another perceived contender win hole, not great. You lose on Tuesday, you have a bunch of days off, you have to kind of stew in that, and then you lose in overtime. And the fourth quarter in overtime was some of the worst offense I've seen from the Aces this season.
Ah, interesting. If only. Half-court offense. I wonder if you've heard that anywhere before. Just curious. Curious.
Oh, man. I wish someone would have made that point. It would have been a good one. But no, like, the Aces have been on this weird arc for me where it's, hey, they're obviously working out some kinks, but they're pretty darn good. And then, hey, this is the most dominant team in the W. I don't know what anyone does with this. And then there was this mid, like, three or four game stretch where it's, okay, why are the Aces down double digits at the half to the Wings? Why are they down double digits at the half to the Fever? What are up with these slow starts? And then they just kick it into high gear. And it's like, okay, that's cool that they can just kind of flip a switch in the third. But that's not ideal. And so their past week of games is another first half deficit against the Minnesota Lynx. Not ideal. I think I said Fever. I meant the Lynx earlier. But you have that deficit against the Lynx, and that turns into a dogfight in, a high-scoring dogfight. You have the Chicago loss. 3 days off. Overtime loss to the Washington Mystics. And in all three of those games, to your point, the half-court offense has not been great for the Aces. So do you want to jump in?
I'm going to Euro step here.
Okay.
This should be I'm going to ask you a question about their half-court defense.
Yeah.
And how you feel about where that's turning out. The Aces are an active, solid defensive team. But in the Chicago game and in the Mystics game, kind of felt like both those teams were able to use their defense against the Aces. And it felt like the Aces were searching for a coverage at times in both of those games, which is an interesting counter with their early season success. And again, this is still the number one team in the W right now, where the defensive versatility really popped off the page. Hey, we can defend in multiple ways. We can throw, you know, drop at you. We can be at the level. We can be aggressive. We can play zone. We can mix all that in and kind of rotate. And that's solid. But what happens when a team counters all of those? And my question, kind of watching those two games, were, what's the base? Because if you're searching and zone doesn't work, now two on the ball doesn't work, and they're popping, even against the Mystics, now they're spaced in EDD and your help, it's a driving kick to her. Now you're switching. Now it's a post up against Chelsea Gray. Can you kind of wiggle to find the balance there and find that base? Because I think more than anything else, their defense is tied to their offense. When they're getting stops, that allows them to flow and they don't have to be in the half court as much. So as much as I make the bit about the half court, they're still a really talented team. But it's different when they're having to bring it up against a set defense, especially those two defenses they just played. And now, you know, you're running a pick and roll. You don't have the same flow. Dribble penetration isn't quite there. You're kind of in the mud, not getting stops on the other end. How much of that do you point to the defense? How concerned are you about maybe the versatility biting them right now?
The versatility biting them is interesting to me. I'm glad you brought up the defense. I was going to flow into it. I am a little bit concerned, and something that I commented on during the watch party that we held for Aces Mistings, and I ended up tweeting about it. Like, I think the tweet was just the Aces defense isn't in a good place right now. And of course, right after that tweet, they forced like 3 turnovers on 4 possessions or something stupid like that, because the Mystics offense also kind of fell apart towards the end of that game. But to your point, I thought their base was going to be Asia at the level or Asia showing higher. Like, that activity popped earlier in the season. And I wonder how much of them shifting to, like, we saw a lot more drop in the Lynx game, for example. I was kind of thinking, like, how much of this is we want to have different looks because defensive versatility is important versus maybe they're getting a little tired using this as a base. And we need to, it's kind of similar to the Timberwolves issue. If we want to go back to, if you want to make an NBA parallel, to where the Wolves for the first month and a half, 2 months of the season were actually a top 10 defense. And they ended up shifting the drop. It's like, wait, well, one, offenses are kind of figuring this out. And two, we don't want Cat doing this for 35 minutes a game. And so I kind of wonder how much, what the balance is there. But just watching that Mystics game, there were so many blown rotations on the back end when they did show 2 to the ball. And the Mystics are just ridiculously good when they're healthy, so they deserve their credit. And they did space the floor well. And they not only moved the ball well, they moved the ball quickly. So there was less of a margin for error for the Aces to get that stuff right. But those, like, there were so many instances where you got 2 players rotating to the same person, back line being late, you're having slips, you're having cuts on the weak side. It was not great. And they could not figure out, in the Mystics game in particular, they couldn't figure out the switching, really. So it got to a point where, okay, we just got to keep things in front and we'll switch and try to scram our way out of it. And the Mystics just didn't let them do it. They either went, it was a quick seal for EDD to post. You mentioned Chelsea Gray post up she had to face EDD on. Like, it was either just a quick dominant seal, quick pass in there, you can't even switch her out, or they got caught in between the scram switch and it's an open kick. And the Mystics, to their credit, shot well from deep for pretty much that entire game. And so it just does, it does feel like the Aces are kind of searching a little bit. I am concerned. I think I'm more concerned with general fatigue than anything. And I would imagine that gets better as they get closer to an actual break. I mean, we're, what, a week away from All-Star, from All-Star weekend and stuff. So that should help them reset a bit. But it is concerning because, to your point, like, Becky Hammon has said it, Asia said it, Kelsey Plum has said it. Like, their players have said in pre- and post-game of conferences, their defense leads to their offense. They make, anytime someone tries to ask about offensive changes and stuff, they quit to point out, well, we think our defense is our best offense. And we're able to get stops. We're able to flow, much like you just said. And if you aren't able to get to that, again, the Lynx game was a high-scoring affair. The Sky carved them up from basically midway through the second quarter onward. Like, the Aces jumped on with 41 points in the first quarter in that Chicago game. It was a, what, 11, 12-point game at the half? And you pointed out, like, hey, the Sky are still shooting like 55% from the field. They're shooting 60% from the field. They're just down because of the bad start. And that didn't stop. And the Mystics kind of carving them up like they did. Like, that's where the big shift's going to have to come. I do think, as concerned, as wonky as the half-court offense can be for them sometimes, I do think in a vacuum they have answers. Chelsea Gray kind of lost the plot during at the end of the Mystics game on Saturday. But in general, like, she is your fourth option offensively. She is your bailout option. And that's a pretty darn good bailout option to have. Asia Wilson has been on a dominant tear as a scorer over the last week and a half, 2 weeks. She can be a mismatch problem. We've seen what Kelsey Plum has been able to do all season long. De'Erica Hamby's starting to find her stroke from deep. Something that you've pointed out. Like, she's starting to look a little bit more comfortable offensively. So I think they can figure some things out. And we've also seen stretches going back to the first Chicago meeting. You put 2 to the ball against the Aces, they can beat that. They have the shooters to beat drop. They have the mismatch hunters to beat like a switching defense. They can do all these things. And throughout this first stretch of games this year, Like, they have done those things. It's just getting that blend back together and doing so more consistently.
No, yeah. And I think to their opposite point, they have the talent. They have the pressure points. I think they need these reps to have to face a little bit of adversity in these competitive games. Understand, what actions do we need to go to? How much do we use Asia as a screener? Where do we go to the post? Because sometimes when you have that kind of talent, everyone has a belief offensively. And can you get to the flow of really hurting defenses and getting them reacting in the half court consistently? And that's something they'll have to engage on. It's a long season. So I'll give them a little bit of bail on the half court offense. I'll bail on the bit for a second. I think they're going to be, all right. But yeah, I got some questions to answer. Speaking of questions to answer, what about the Sky, man?
The Sky are starting to roll. They have the longest win streak in the W right now with 3 games. The aforementioned win over the Aces last Tuesday, they blew the brakes off the Sparks 82-59. And then they had themselves a nail biter against the Lynx, which we should probably just stop for a moment to say, hey, the Lynx are just playing better as of late. Like, they also deserve credit for that.
You just say that to plug your article?
No, but Jessica Shepard has been playing pretty well.
3-2-1.
If you want to check that out, basketballnews.com. You can read about Jessica Shepard doing some things off the bench now, but still playing well. Anyway, what has impressed you the most about the Chicago Sky during this recent run?
Honestly, their belief. I've been up and down with the Sky all season long, but they play with a belief that they can win any game that they're in. And they definitely have the talent to do it. And I think at this point, you just kind of have to accept. Maybe they won't hit the highest of notes that we think they could right this second. But they're going to fight every game. They took that punch for the Aces and responded. Then you get a blowout win. Then you're in a dogfight with Minnesota. And they've been in dogfights all season. So if you look, I think what? They've won 6 of their last 8 games. Lost the Mystics by 2. Beat Connecticut by 4. Beat the Liberty by 2, beat the Dream by 6 in overtime, lost the Fever by 2, had that comeback against the Aces, blowout against the Sparks, win by 3 against the Lynx. This is kind of just who they are right this second.
Just grinding it out. They
are a grind team, find a way to win team. We believe in ourselves. I think they know they have a higher level. I think offensively for me, there's food left on the table. And it's not necessarily a talent issue. It's a flow issue for me. When you have those kind of pressure points in that starting lineup, I'd like to see a little bit more cohesive at times. And when they hit the notes, you see it. But there's other times where it's like, wait, why is everyone on the right side of the floor? Okay, swing. What? There's no tempo here. There's no purpose. What are we doing? And then they play 5 minutes about standing basketball. It's like, oh, yeah, that's what you guys can do. And then that defense brings to the table. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's also what you can do. So they kind of just feel like a team finding their way, figuring it out, gunning it out, grinding it out, and they're right where they thought they would be.
It's funny that they've dealt, once again, not as dramatically as they did last year, but they're still dealing with some roster turnover, like even in the most recent game against the Lynx. No Kalia Copper in that one. And so they're still plugging holes and still trying to sort things out. We just had Mark Schindler on a recent episode. We talked a little bit about some of the guard decisions that they have to make, particularly on the bench. They're still trying to sort that out. And yet, there's Candace Parker just racking up triple-doubles, being one of, if not the best hedge big in basketball, wrecking stuff on defense, playmaking from the high post, getting ISO buckets, sprinkling in fadeaways when necessary. She's just doing everything you want her to do. Draining the occasional 3 as well. Emma Mieseman, she's just been very good, just to be frank about it. She's pretty much filling out all the gaps you want her to offensively. And they're still waiting on Allie Quigley to get back to her sharp shooting form, but she's played well otherwise. Courtney Vandersloot just hit a game winner. She's still directing the table. So they still have a bunch of talent as they're working through this. And the fact that they're able to kind of grind it out, take punches and still find answers, like, I think it bodes well for them. I'm sorry for boring analysis, but like, they're a pretty dangerous team when they're humming, and they seem to be starting to find some stuff.
Not in a Boris Duncan. Nope.
I'm sorry to disappoint.
It's all right. I'm happy that the platform shifted series for this year in particular? Because this is a really fun year. You have the Aces and Sky playing. You have the Sun, Storm, and Mystics all playing at a high level in different ways. You have the Wings trying to find their way. You have the Liberty trying to scrap way up. Dream hang on. Sparks for Future fighting. It's going to be fun to watch these teams go toe-to-toe, especially if it continues to ramp up close to the playoffs. Because there's not a ton of separation.
Yeah, it's getting tight.
For it to come down to, I wouldn't want it to come down to a single elimination in this year. In this season, I want to see the adjustments, the moves, the counters, because out of the top five, Aces, Sky, Sun, Storm, Mystics, you wouldn't be surprised if any of them won a title, right?
Yeah.
That's fun. That's fun. Each one of them can make a run. So kind of can't wait to see how it all shakes out.
I'm right there with you. You mentioned the Mystics. I just want to go kind of quick. Like, what do you make of the Mystics right now? Are you any closer to figuring out what they are?
A very good defensive team that sometimes gets in the mud offensively, but also has EDD. So sometimes it doesn't matter. It's about as close as I've gotten.
Seems like a pretty clean template. Like, you beat them. Hey, man, I'm right there with you. I just want them to have a run. Give me a run of five games with the full assortment. Five. Before the playoffs, I should say. But like, give me five. Because it feels like they'll have like a big win or two. And it's like, all right, cool. Here come the Mystics. And then you're watching a game. You check lead pass. Like, hey, wait. Why are the Mystics down 7 to Team X? And it's like, oh, EDD isn't playing. All right. Oh, the starting lineup's different now. We're missing a guard. Oh, okay. Cool. So, like, I would like for them to just have a stretch to where it really makes sense. We can really get a feel for what the offense is in particular. Because I think we touched on this a little bit early in the season. But I think part of the offense getting in the mud is because they're still trying to sort out who's doing what. And so I think once we get a better picture, or once they get a better picture of that, we can see them firing on all cylinders. The talent is there. Like, EDD has been busting tail all season long when she's been out there. And she did, just to take it back to Saturday, the battle between her and Asia Wilson, that's the stuff of dreams right there. That's the stuff of dreams. EDD just stuffing Asia at the rim. Asia also stuffing EDD when she's trying to attack the basket. Like, that's a star battle and a half. That's good stuff. We need those kind of battles on national television. But at any rate, Mystics are good. They're also fifth. Like, do you see them making like a top three push?
I could see it. But possibly top four. I don't know. Connecticut doesn't really seem to be cooperating with anything of that nature. We're gonna lock up and find a way. That's kind of the template of them, Seattle and Washington.
I was just about to say, like, with the Aces and Sky, it's just like, okay, they could do it, just do it. With the Sun, Storm, and Mystics, like, I think they're the very obvious second tier in the W right now. Or I guess they're like tier 1.5, if you want to put the Aces and the Sky in the top tier. So whereas, like, the Sun can just blow up everything you want to do on offense. And they've also been a really good offense this year. Then it's, hey, here's a 5-shot attempt game from Jonquel Jones. Neat. Why is that still happening? And it's, hey, why are the Storm in the dogfight? Oh, right. They scored 4 points in the last 6.5 minutes. That's cool. That's what a team with that much offensive talent does. And then again, with the Mystics, like, wait, why are they in a dogfight? Oh, they're just missing their best player for scheduled rest. Bet.
I think it's the problem is with those three, the quote unquote flaws are just a lot easier to see. And there are also things you could see potentially swing a playoff series.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, the Sun did the thing again. Okay. All right.
And we just saw it last year.
Right. Seattle was very competitive, but which is interesting. It kind of flipped. I feel like Seattle was like, oh, can they get enough stops? And now it's like, nope. Can they score enough? Which is odd considering who they have. And yeah, the Mystics, you just don't know what version is going to show up.
Correct.
Because one day that you're nodding like, oh, yeah, I see it. And the next day you're like, why is there 5 seconds left on the shot clock?
What is this action that you're standing 30 feet from the hoop to watch set up? Like, we don't need that. This isn't what we signed up for. Please move the ball. Anyway, more of a general question for you. We talked about it a little bit during our most recent watch party. Where are you at with the Rookie of the Year race right now?
Is this a pre-plug for an article that you've written already?
No, it's not. Oh. That's a good idea. But no, it's not.
Louise, all right.
We have to, if not this week, definitely next week, we have to do like the actual awards episode. It's definitely time. We're reaching the midway point of the season for the W.
Okay.
So that's coming soon. But right. I do want to hone in on Rookie of the Year for a bit, because it was Ryan Howard's to lose. And now, predictably, because of the schedule and also the Dream are missing some players and whatnot. But like now the Dream are also losing. And defenses, as the season's gone on, have kind of keyed in more on Ryan Howard and her tendencies, and also kind of the sets that Atlanta uses to spring her free. Like a lot of those are becoming switches now. And it's been kind of tough sledding on the scoring front. She still gets tough buckets, but the fact that that's kind of becoming the diet right now is not all her fault, but it's kind of rough. Meanwhile, Shakira Austin in Washington, still being a menace defensively, starting to see more and more mid-range jumpers, starting to see more flashes as a driver. She's just contributing to winning. Last time I checked, like the on-off, if you want to go into the advanced numbers, like the on-off split for her has been ridiculous for most of the year. So you have that working in her favor as well. Is Ryan Howard your Rookie of the Year favorite right now?
I still have it leaning that way.
Okay.
It's no disrespect to Shakira Austin. It definitely is a conversation. Hate to use the phrase, but I think what Howard does is going to end up being louder than what Shakira Austin does, fair or unfair. And, you know, I think it's going to be tough for people to vote the other way, in my opinion. Not that's right, that's not fair, not there's not a case for Shakira Austin, because what she's doing on both ends of the floor consistently, night in, night out, not easy to do. But I think it may lean Ryan Howard.
I feel you. I'm really liking what Shakira is bringing to the table. I don't know, man. Like it's feeling like a toss up to me right now, which is not where I expected to be, especially midway through the year. Because early on, I thought she was just going to run away with it. But I am really. Let me not phrase it that way. I was about to say I really appreciate the two-way impact that we're seeing from Shakira Austin. Like, I don't want to undersell what Ryan Howard is doing defensively either, because she's been a firm positive on that end.
I don't know if it's an undersell. It's just that's Shakira Austin's pot.
Yeah.
You know, that's what she does. So if that's your selling point for the conversation, you're probably going to lean towards that more than with Howard. I don't think it's slight. It's just, you know, Shakira Austin competes every single night in a lot of different ways. So that's what she brings to the table.
Yeah. Okay. I don't want it to get lost. But like, well, she's being a two-way player. And it's like, well, Ryan is too. Like, she is. But to your point, like, the scoring is the calling card for Ryan, much like the defensive versatility, at least right now, is the calling card for Shakira Austin. It is wild what they ask her to do and how high she has to play up. And the active hands forcing deflections, that's there. The recovery skills are there. And even if you're involving one of their fours, whether it's EDD or otherwise, in the action, like, she's cleaning it up as a weak side helper. She is well beyond her years as a defender already. And the Mystics should be excited for her future. I can't wait to see her experiment more offensively. That's going to be fun to watch. Before we close the W section out, any teams, any players you want to shout out before we move on?
Come on, man.
I just want to throw you the lob. You can slam it down.
Come on. You know what time it is.
What time is it?
It's Liberty season.
There we go.
It is Liberty season, folks. Just buckle up. This is a last chance. Tickets are moving quick. The defense is actually here.
For an extended stretch.
Like, actually holding teams under 80 points. Wild. It'll be interesting how they respond to this next stretch, because I do believe they play the Aces like three of their next six games. So we're going to learn about the Liberty. But Madine!
She's been wild. I don't need to shout out the passing every podcast, though I will. I don't mind, because it's still wild. The shooting, though. She's been bombing away.
Not shy.
Not shy at all.
The Liberty team is not shy. It's going up. It's going up from multiple places, buddy. Don't you worry.
All five positions have everyone. They got someone at each position. Like, okay, yeah, I'll fire it up.
Oh, Natasha Howard, Han, Sabrina, Sammy Wickham will come and let it fly. Those don't swing it. Those don't swing it. But other than that.
I will say on the Dolson point, like, I've enjoyed the high post passing from her. That's been fun.
Put some respect on her name.
She's doing the thing at the lay sets and whatnot. She's picking out cutters. It's been a good pass. That's also what I enjoy about the Liberty. Am I allowed to make that comment before I continue?
You can make the comment. Just do not write the article.
I can't believe I've been barred from writing about the Liberty. That is insane to me.
I don't want to see it.
That's amazing.
You were not in the gym shooting. Sorry, sir.
What do you mean?
Drake said it.
Okay. You got it. Anyway, I appreciate not only are there really no players afraid of taking a bunch of shots. A lot of good ball movers. Sabrina, Maureen, Stephanie Dolson, Tasha Howard can also make some kicks for you. Like, it's once they're really flowing, you can't really help anywhere. Because either they can shoot and you don't want to help, or even if you do cheat off, like they pass the ball and move the ball well enough and move well enough off the ball as well to just kind of dice you up. And so it's been a fun team. They are quietly working their way up the standings right now. They've won their last two. They are sitting at 7 right now. And at 7, they are half a game behind the Dallas Wings, which they are still trying to figure some things out. I guess we touched on like the Sparks getting blown out. Like, I don't want to have the what's happening with the Sparks discussion again.
No, we don't have to do it. It's fine.
Why is Kennedy Carter not playing again? What did they just, is that already?
We don't have to do it.
Okay. Well, all right, fine. That's
Sparks don't have to fly. 4th of July isn't here yet. We're good.
That's true. That's true. Speaking of July, you did mention the Liberty Aces stretch. I am going to be at one of those Liberty Aces games. Very excited about that one. Just want to watch some hoop. Not even working the game. I'm just going to be there. I just want to soak in the hoop.
Okay, I see you. Normal people keep the world going.
Oh, brother.
But those who dare to be different lead us into tomorrow.
No way. No way was that the transition. No way. Okay, let's head into the NBA segment. I want to be brief. I will be brief. If you have more to add, you're well within your right. What the heck did we just witness over the last like 72 hours?
A tennis match. A great tennis match. Forehands, backhands, everything you wanted to see.
Oh.
Every time I saw it, I was like, I mean, this is a lot, but also this could mean nothing. But yeah, man, this is how leverage goes, man. The evolution of it all. I can't even keep track of all of it. I mean,
what it started
with. And it's funny because you can't believe everything in leak season, but it is kind of fun sometimes to just monitor it. It's like, yo, Kyrie and KD might not be friends. And then it was like, nah, we came together. And y'all got to figure this out. And then all the rest that kept coming, and then they kept mentioning, hey, you know, Kyrie could just sign for $6 million.
I'm just like, come on, dog. What are we doing right now?
And I love that just the crescendo, it just kept building and building and all the anticipation, and then boom, opt in. That was it.
That was it.
And now if you're Brooklyn, boy, you've got some things to do. So, you know, the mess is not as big as you thought it would be, but you still got some cleaning up to do.
Yeah.
And this is the tough part. Like, I'm interested to hear what you have to say on this. Because when it got to the point where the Nets were like, that's fine, go find a deal. I didn't know if that was more like a, hey, I don't know if we can do this with you, man. Or, you know what? You go find a deal, pal. I couldn't tell which way that was. And then clearly it was like, hey, our offer's still here. And Kyrie was like, you know what? I'm in.
I am exhausted, man. I am exhausted. Like, full disclosure, like, Kyrie opting out and taking $6 million to go to the Lakers, like, I never really bought that portion of it. Like, I just, if there was going to be an NBA star that would do that, it would probably be him. But, like, the likelihood of him doing that was very low. But I guess what kind of threw me off was, one, just all of this. Let's just be frank about it. All of this has just been a lie. But beyond that, we got to the point where it's, okay, Kyrie and his representation has requested, you know, permission to seek out a sign and trade. And it's, all right, cool. So Kyrie wants out. Here's his list. And then there was a counter report like, well, okay, there are six teams on the list. Like, five of them are like, we're good. And I was like, well, that doesn't seem to bode well. And, oh, yeah, the Nets don't really like this six team and what they're offering either. It would appear that pairing Russell Westbrook and Ben Simmons together is not something that the Nets would be chomping at the bit to do. Who knew? And so it goes from that to Kyrie has opted in from Shams. But not just Kyrie's opted in. It's he's bypassing multiple opt-in and trade opportunities. I'm just like, wait a minute. What opt-in and trade scenarios if there wasn't any out there? Like, that's just, I guess, part of the tennis match, part of the leverage, part of the he said, she said, part of who's getting intel from which portion of the organization and all that good stuff. But, like, that was what kind of threw me for a loop. I was like, wait, what are we doing here exactly? Like, if the offers are there, why is he opting in? And if he's opting in, like, why is it, I'm exhausted. Now I just want to see what happens with Nicholas Claxton's restricted free agency.
And oh, yeah, that's the other thing. I want to see how the Nets try and figure that part out. Oh, you got it. You got to add something to this mix.
Yeah.
And what are you selling this year? That's gonna be tough.
That's fun. Come join us. There's some interest expressed in PJ Tucker. Like, yeah, leave Miami, the team that let you do things with the ball on offense this year. our pitch is whatever is happening with this organization right now. Woo! I can't say I buy that.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I'm sure they'll find some talent though. You know, the whole, I like how Katie just put his hands up. I was like, hey, I got to figure that out. Let me know what y'all do and we'll be here. But yeah, it's a mess. I don't even know if I did any of that justice because I don't know, man.
Dude, it's so.
Asking me to talk about Kyrie, I don't know. He's his own person. He's going to do his own thing, man. I can't call it, but it's a fascinating juncture for the Brooklyn Nets because you built this from where it was. Like, that's the thing. People don't remember where it was. I do. I was there. And also, you got to remember, like, a lot of things come from up top, but we can talk about that on a different pod. But I remember, man, we got the 8 seed lost in the first round. I looked around. The tagline was core continuity, something else with a C. And the big move was, like, Thomas Robinson. And I was like, okay. All right, I see what we're trying to do here. It didn't work.
I thought he's gonna be so good, man.
Shout out to you, Rob. Love that guy. But yeah, nah. Didn't work. And now, you know, they had to pivot. And they pivoted. And they pivoted. And then got three stars. That's the thing about the league, man. Everyone, like, just realize it's fine to use the culture buzzword. But every one of these teams building a culture is eventually looking to take that culture and open a door and get some talent to come in. Mm-hmm. OKC got a plan somewhere. There's a whiteboard somewhere that, hey, there's an end date for this. You seen what Chicago and Sacramento did? Like, yo, we need something. Please give us something. And maybe we could turn that something into something else. And maybe we could turn that into something else. Look, the Pelicans did. Where they were and where they are now. Huge difference.
Pretty true.
That window is so short these days. You do not have the benefit of the doubt with stars anymore. The runs are different. The whole path of, yo, we're a young up-and-coming team. get to the playoffs, couple first round losses. Now we're on the rise still. No. You made two straight play-ins. You're fired. Steve Clifford, please come back.
Yes. Beautiful segue. What was your first reaction when the Hornets were like, guess who's back? Steve Clifford.
A genuine wait. That was an RKO out of nowhere. I my second thought was, what did Mike D'Antoni say? Like, does Michael Jordan just not like was MJ just like, nah, I'm not doing this. we need stops. Did you watch the team last year? We can't get no stops. What are you gonna do?
I tell you what, man, if Steve Clifford's gonna do anything else, he's gonna make sure his teams don't turn it over. They are gonna pack the paint, they are gonna box out and grab defensive rebounds, and they're probably gonna play slow while doing it. But the infrastructure will be set. I don't know how good it's going to be with what they have on the roster right now. That's a whole nother thing. We have an entire offseason to go. They addressed some of the defense stuff with drafting Mark Williams. We'll talk about their drafting stuff a little bit later. But they got moves to make. But if there's a guy that's going to take a young team, like, nah, y'all are clamping up. Y'all at least going to know what you're supposed to do in order to clamp up. Steve Clifford's your guy. Like, I don't mind it, but I'm also with you. Like, Mike D'Antoni was here, and then it was Atkinson, then he left, and then it was D'Antoni again. And then it was like Rob Boone's like, hey, wait, you know, Mike, they still talking to Steve. And then a day and a half later, it's, well, actually, they're hiring Steve. And I was like, wait, like, he's objectively a good coach, but like, also, wait a minute. One, is he okay? Because if he's taking his full, you know, if he's taking the head coaching job, I'm assuming like the health stuff is in order. So I hope that he's able to remain okay. But two, this is quite the shift, because this coaching search was, I mean, it wasn't just D'Antoni and Kenny Atkinson. Like, they were interviewing some high-level assistants. They're looking to kind of bounce in and get the first job. Like, it was a pretty, what, Terry Stotts was named too, if you want to go back to the retreads and stuff. Like, they really opened up the search, and it turned into like the Thanos scene. It's like, you know, it all just brought you right back to me. I was like, okay, cool.
Hey man, them searches, they just be looking for information.
Well, it's not tea on the pod.
Nope, I don't know what you're talking about. It's not even a shot against Clifford or anything. He's a very good coach. You know what he's going to do with the team. It's just interesting that he got brought back after they was like, nah, fam, you got to go. Like, you don't see that every day. My only thing is, it's always interesting, because when a coach comes back after a couple of years, there is a reinvigoration and there is a sense of, okay, the league has shifted a little bit. And we even saw it with Tibbs in New York. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was still some half court stuff, but it was different. How does he come back with it when you see what this team can do in transition and playing with pace? Can you now balance what you do defensively and enhance it, and then enhance the half court? Because if he can do that, you know, does he come back with the Clifford plus what y'all was doing formula? Because that's not bad.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I want to see, like, Bobcat sets. shout out to Steve Clifford for running 9 million sets for Al Jefferson, torturing young Steve Jones Jr., my first scout. I had all them plays down. Al was not going to hurt us.
I know that's right. Talk your talk.
No, then they started running pick and roll with Kemba. And I was like, oh. I mean, that was there, but I didn't think he was going to spam it like that, dog.
Like, oh, this is different. Oh, if I go back to like my fandom days, oh, man. Watching Al Jefferson just torture Hassan Whiteside on the block in the mid-2010s. Dog. Al Jefferson deserves his flowers for just being a post bucket for a decade plus. Like, he just did the thing, man.
Can we get an Al Jefferson is a problem tweet sometime in the next month or so? I just need one of those.
I will make a video comp tonight, and I will post it on the timeline. I will do it. I might post the video with the new pod alert tweet. Like, Al Jefferson was a, that might be the title of the podcast. Al Jefferson was a problem. Like, how do we get here from W talk, draft talk, trade stuff? How is Al Jefferson the name of the title of the podcast? We might just do that. I've said it on the podcast, so now it has to be the title. It is written. That's fine. While we're here and having some fun, Steve, do you want to do some live reacting on this podcast?
Oh, boy. All right. I think last time we did this, I hijacked the entire episode with the Ryan Saunders rant. So what do we got?
According to Chris Haynes of Yahoo. Chris B. Haynes. I'm sorry.
Oh,
okay. Gotta differentiate. Anyway, per this tweet, five-time NBA All-Star John Wall will secure a buyout with the Houston Rockets and become an unrestricted free agent, league sources tell Yahoo Sports.
So you got the bag.
Yeah, the buyout has to be pretty hefty,
I imagine. Because I imagine the opt-in was a very easy procedure for him. And I think he was completely fine figuring that part out, and they must have came to agreement in terms. So John Wall, free agent.
Yes.
You know what I'm going to say.
What are you going to say?
There's one spot that's perfect for him.
This should be good. Miami. The Washington wit.
Go to Miami.
I got you. That is intriguing to me.
If only because they always do that all the time. That's the kind of their thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's done. And it's going to be funny because we do this all the time with these players. Once they get a contract, we think of them differently. Then they don't have that contract anymore and they produce again. It's like, oh, yeah, he can play. John Wall's good again. It's like,
no, he was always this level of good. You saw the contract figure and it's a natural thing to do. Like, this is, it's a salary cap sport. So you're always looking at okay, is he producing relative to what he's making, relative to what the cap is, relative to what financial flexibility the team that I root for has. And so it's a natural landing spot for people that get super invested in teams or whatever. But also it does kind of lend into what you're saying, to where it's like, hey, wait, he's not bad. He still can hoop. Just the $47 million seems steep.
He gave him back $7, dog.
Oh, that's it? Oh, that's amazing. Hey, yo. That man said, what you going to do for this 40? That's amazing. John Wall securing the bag, man.
Oh, are you ready for the Clippers John Wall content?
That's absolutely happening. Like, I think that's the natural landing spot. Like, the Miami fit makes sense. I wonder, in light of hopefully a healthier and more peaceful offseason for Kyle Lowry, in addition to what Gabe Vincent was able to give him last year, I wonder if that dwindles the interest a little bit on the point guard front for them. Because I agree with you, Wall would be a boon for them. If nothing else, it gives them another guard that can actually push the pace. And I mean, Kyle Lowry does that and juices it with hitter heads and stuff like that in the pull-up shooting. Gabe Vincent isn't that guy. Even Wall at this stage can still grab a defensive board and push and get downhill to find someone else. So, that dynamic is necessary. And just putting him on a playoff-level team. Obviously, the Heat were in the conference finals, so they're a tier above that. But just putting him around playoff-caliber talent, he doesn't have to do as much as he was trying to do in his last playing season in Houston. And so maybe you see a little bit of a bounce back defensively from him, just a little less tread on the tires there. Like, that'd be fun. I think this is going to be Clippers, though. Kind of has to be Clippers.
Are you ready for Reggie Jackson, John Wall backcourt?
Oh boy. Are the Clippers ready for Reggie Jackson, John Wall backcourt? That's the real question here. Because if John Wall closes a game over Reggie Jackson, that's going to be funny. If only because we know how highly Reggie Jackson views himself.
Off season Reggie slander. All right. Well,
it's not even slander. I'm just, I just think back to the Russ Jackson dynamic early on, where he's riding starting point guard on the shoes while Russ was there. And this was this was Russ. I was And so if John Wall, who basically just didn't play for however long, signs with the Clippers and then just gets a starting spot because he's John Wall. Like, I at least want to see that play out. Like, again, this, and even going to that reference, like, that was young Reggie Jackson. Like, I'm sure he's matured and stuff through then, so like, it probably won't be a problem. But I want to see that, just to see what that dynamic is going to be like. But the Clippers just on court, like, that makes sense. We've done the, how many times have we done the paint touch, rim pressure conversation with the Clippers over the last year and a half? Fourth option, John Wall can help you with that.
All right. Well, turn it around. I like it.
We here. What are some other fun Wall spots? How do you feel about Boston?
Not as high on that one.
Don't like it?
It just feels like Dennis Schroeder all over again. All due respect.
Boy, Wall slander indeed. Amazing.
No, I'm just talking about the fit.
Wow.
I just don't like it.
All right. Okay. Dennis Schroeder, huh? That's...
No. Okay. Play style wise, come on, man. It's gonna be the... Never mind. You know what? Take it and run with it. Run with the ball. Go ahead. Score a touchdown. Do whatever you gotta do.
Score a touchdown. I'm just asking questions, man. I just, you know, I just... You do very well, you know. You do the comps. I just wasn't expecting during a shooter. That's all. No beef.
The Knicks.
Oh God, no, 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 no. They can't get in. We just saw what Emmanuel quickly did when they finally let him do stuff. If it's not a star, let Emmanuel quickly get the point guard job.
The Lakers.
Is this before or after they move Russ somehow? Because they can't have both of those.
The Nets.
Maybe.
The Sixers.
Even, I feel like you're saying the Sixers just to troll me. That's 100% a troll job. Because if we see, if we get a Wall Milton Melton lineup with that second unit dog, I am going to be irate. Doc Rivers rolls out Wall, Melton, Paul Reed, and Tobias Harris and says, go score points. Yeah. Anyway, I don't really know if I see the Sixers fit. I kind of
just want to see John Wall do something random, like go to Denver or something like that.
Oh, that'd be so funny. The Nuggets like trade Monty Morris and like, hey, here's John Wall. It's like, okay, sure, I guess. How about the Phoenix Suns?
You tell me how you'd feel about that.
I would like that. We got to the second round of playoffs and they just didn't have a backup point guard. They also didn't have a point guard that gets to the rim either. Sorry, Chris Paul.
Campaign. Wow. Okay. ISO.
I mean, Cam got benched, basically. Landry Shamet is not a point guard. And Chris Paul just... Y'all know how I feel about Chris Paul, but he just didn't get it done. I mean, the rim pressure stuff was an issue all year long. He was just so freaking good, it didn't matter. But once the Mavs were like, nah, we're just going to switch and then we're going to help around these areas. Have fun. He just couldn't do anything on offense. That was unfortunate. But at any rate, like Wall would be, I would like Wall in Phoenix. Looks like we are getting some more stuff rolling in. Mark Stein is making it seem like the Clippers are going to be like a foregone conclusion. So we'll see. Maybe we're just going through spots and he ends up a Clipper, which I love that fit if he's able to stay healthy, though. That's Wall with PG and Kawhi, who I think it was later last week. He's like completely cleared. Full intensity basketball stuff now. So the recovery from the ACL is looking pretty solid, I suppose. I'm excited about this Clippers team, man. That's a deep roster, and they have the star talent. You're adding John Wall to that as a, hey, just help. We don't need you to carry the offense. We got wings for that. We got guards that can pull up, take the pressure off. We got Marcus Morris. If we want to post him up 12 times a game, he'll do that, whether we ask him to or not. Just come help. That's a fun spot for John Wall. So if that's where it goes, I'm in. It's going to be a fun 2K team, if nothing else.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. I see you. You're here.
Hey, I'm just saying. Like, they're going to be fun. Let's talk some draft stuff to I guess to close it out, maybe close it out adjacent. We had a live stream for the draft, which was a lot of fun. Steve stuck around for the first round at least, but we had some fun chopping it up, looking at the fits, talking about fits. So good stuff. Steve, who had a good draft for you? Whose draft did you enjoy?
Well, this is your ministry. You tell me who you enjoyed. I'm going to cut you off. I'm going to go real quick. Get my stuff out the window. This is where you shine. This is where you do what you do. I like what the Detroit Pistons did. Mm-hmm. When you add the talent of Jaden Ivey and you end up getting Jalen Duren, that's really good business right there. And I like the Ivy fit because you have an ability with Cade to bring Ivy along a little bit slower while also not taking away from Cade. I know there's some concerns on how do they mix, but I think it's time for Cade to get more on-ball reps, and Ivy's going to come along at a pace that he won't necessarily take away from that. And if he does, that means he's playing very well, in my opinion.
Yeah,
and the Pistons have shown that they're okay with playing Cade off-ball. It's kind of a design. And now if you have Ivy going and Cade going, you have two different pressure points. And to get a big by Duren, I think that's great for their big man room. So I think you're checking off boxes, you're staying young, you're improving. They keep trying to find their core. I liked what the Rockets did. It kind of felt like a lot, but getting Jabari, that's not bad. That's not bad. Now, how the offensive flow works is going to be interesting, and that's no disrespect to anyone, but there is one ball. But as far as what he can do fit-wise with Jalen Green, having that in the arsenal, adding Eason, they got a lot of young talent there. I think that's fun.
I'm with you.
I like the OKC going with the Spider-Man meme.
Getting the Jalens.
They took our Williams debate and made it a real-life thing. That's where I'm at. Where you got?
Much like I'm not allowed to write about the Liberty, I guess. Like, I'm just claiming OKC. I got to protect them from you. After you called like 80% of the roster mid towards the end of last year?
Well, considering they just replaced most of them, they agreed.
Oh, here we go. Anyway.
I was right. What you going to do when Pokuleski?
Anyway. How dare you?
Ken Wish Williams. Wishes he was on the floor.
You are getting entirely too much pleasure out of this. I don't like it. I don't like it. I do not like it. Anyway, shout out to the Thunder. I love their draft. I will say the trade for Usman is going to be interesting. Like, I just need to do research into what he can do and stuff. Like, I'm not the draft Nick. And so just on the surface, trading three protected first.
Neither the Knicks.
Anyway. So just on the surface, as someone who isn't privy to his game yet, three protected first seems steep, but we'll just have to see on that front. But getting the Jalens, getting Chet, they needed an actual center. They needed someone to spearhead their defense on the interior. God bless Derek Favors. You shouldn't be asking him to do that. That's not, come on. Don't put that on him. That's not fair to him. Chet can be one of the best defenders in basketball if he develops the way that most people think he can be. So, having that infrastructure, I think, is strong. That's a smart move from them. I echo your sentiments about Detroit. I want to say Atlanta with an asterisk because I was a little bit confused by AJ Griffin sliding the way that he did. And so I just love them getting him. But the asterisk is I don't know who's going to be on that roster. And I don't know if he's going to be on that roster yet. Because they are in the running for DeJounte Murray, which we can talk about shortly. But pending roster moves, I guess, is where the asterisk comes in. But the pick itself, I like AJ Griffin there. And they needed the shooting. And he is one of, if not the best shooter in the draft class. I enjoy that pick as well. Who else do I want to shout out here?
I'm going to shout out. This is going to be a big shocker, but I really like that Agbaji pick from the Cavs. I really, because I like his defensive activity. Mm-hmm. And if he can develop into 3 and D, that's going to help that team. And if you have multiple guys who can kind of do that, help you out with the Okoro deal as he continues to develop. I just like the fit there. So I know it's, I'm sure it's going to be one of those, well, the ceiling, but I think he's going to be more ready, plug and play than most people think. And then I felt like I liked what the Pelicans did just by, you know, when you grab Daniels, I was like, that's a good idea.
I love it. They did it. That's a good call.
They just keep getting guys who can play and defend. And it's like, ha, interesting. You got a lot of youth there that I kind of, I enjoy watching play. I like that pick too.
Okay. Good call there. Just to bounce back to the John Wall thing, since we now have a Woj tweet. He is expected to sign with the Los Angeles Clippers. So thank you for listening to us talk about other fits for John Wall. He will be a Clipper. So I am excited to see how he looks there.
All right, let's redo the segment. From the window to the wall.
You know what?
What happened?
I'm not finishing that. The Spurs had a good draft. Woo! Jeremy Sochan. He is a ridiculously rangy defender. And I'm always going to be a sucker for those guys. That's a fun pick. Talked a little bit about Mark Williams. Like, I just want to know, like, what Charlotte... I came in when they had the draft day trade where details were flying left and right. I was like, okay, what is Charlotte doing? They end up getting a pretty nice return in terms of picks, so that's cool. Mark Williams should help their defense. They need all of the defensive help they can get. I guess two questions, one related to the trade and one not. One, what are the Knicks really this enticed by Jalen Brunson? To where they basically punted on...
Clearly,
like that's a lot. A lot for the right to pay Jalen Brunson like 25, 26 mil a year. Good.
They think he's the guy, and they're going to get ready to give him the bag. If he takes it, who knows? But it does feel like a lot of shuffling of the pieces for maybe, unless they know some answers we don't.
I mean, they hired his dad, so I mean, that, if there's anywhere to get intel, whoa, like that.
Said the quiet part out loud.
I'm just, I mean, hey, we tell the truth on the dunker spot, it's fine. But that's a lot for Jalen Brunson, man. That's a lot for Jalen Brunson.
Okay, quick question. Do you start John Wall or do you start Reggie Jackson?
like, honestly, I would start Wall. I don't know how that conversation goes, though, especially what Reggie has meant to this Clipper team over the last 2 years.
I don't think it goes well.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I don't think... Yeah, John Wall's coming off the bench, but you got John Wall, Norman Powell off the bench.
I'm trying to contain my Clipper excitement, but...
I told you weeks ago you're going to pick the Clippers to be in the finals.
Look, man, this is... Hey, man.
This man's going to say Bucks Clippers here in 2 months.
Let's see how the offseason goes. But, man, healthy Clippers team, man. That's a talented group. That's a really talented group. It's a really talented group. Oh, anyway, let's move back to draft night thoughts and such. since we already talked about it briefly, did you like the D'Anthony Melton trade for the Sixers?
For the Sixers?
Yes.
Yeah. I thought it was a solid deal. I think, obviously, Morey knows what Melton can do. I think Melton can help them off the bench, get you some more shooting, get you some more consistency. It doesn't help the size deal as far as off the bench lineup goes, but it's not bad. How did you feel about it? Now that you... And it's a big win for me. Let's just have some more fun because... You now have D'Anthony Melton featured in a Doc Rivers offense, which means these all bench lineups that you talk about are now going to be headlined kind of by D'Anthony Melton. So if it works, you got to take a L. And if it doesn't work, you got to take a L.
I don't like it. I don't like it. Taking off the hat and the blind is not a good stuff. Objectively, a very good trade for the Philadelphia Sixers. D'Anthony Melton is very good at basketball. He is a stout guard defender. He is a guy that has improved his jumper during his NBA career. He can slash a little bit for you, work second side. He is a good player on a very good contract, and all it cost was Danny Green, who is not going to play for most of the year as he recovers from injury, and the 23rd pick, which, if we are to follow Doc Rivers' history with playing rookies, particularly those drafted late, more likely than not that it wasn't going to play anyway. So you turn that into a ready-made player that can help your guard room, because the guard room has been pretty inconsistent, particularly with your bench. That is good stuff from the Philadelphia Sixers. Bravo. I am terrified about what this means for D'Anthony Melton. I just want the lineups to make sense. D'Anthony Melton is a good player. He is not a point guard, so I hope that he is not tasked with being the backup point guard for this Sixers team, because they don't trust Shake Milton.
Nah, he's not going to be. It'll be Maxi time. It'll be right there next to Maxi.
Okay, they better stagger this correctly. That's all I got on that front. It makes sense if he's used correctly. If they're saying, hey, set up the play with D'Anthony Melton, like you're not going to have a good time. Like, there's a reason him and Tyus Jones work so well together. Like, that's.
There's a reason Memphis just punted on D'Anthony Melton, huh? If only.
Okay. Did you feel good about that one?
Felt great.
I bet. We're going to take a trip down memory lane very briefly, since we didn't have a second pod last week. And so the trade was announced, I think, Tuesday. Jeremy Grant is a Blazer. We haven't gotten pod thoughts on that one. Does this move the needle for you in terms of your thoughts about Portland?
Does it move the needle for you in terms of your thoughts about Portland?
I don't know yet. Like, Jeremy Grant, number one option, does not move the needle for me at all. Jeremy Grant, the role player, absolutely moves the needle for me. Jeremy Grant, the second or maybe third best player on the team, probably second best player on the team, I don't know. That feels steep, but also Portland was so lacking in, like, wings that can hold their own in space and also do stuff on offense, that Jeremy Grant is a massive step up of who they had to fill those particular roles. So, like, it's good. And the fact that it basically cost them a late first, some seconds, and they just absorb them into the trade exception, like, that's pretty solid. That's good stuff. You got Dame some help. As far as moving the ceiling, I don't know, man. Like, there needs to be more done. I am just going back to the draft. Like, I'm intrigued by the Shaedon Sharpe pick. Like, I wonder how much rope he gets in year one, or is he going to be the shiny, hey, we'll trade you this plus the rights to Shaedon Sharpe for this other established guy so we can really make the push around Dame. Like, that's yet to be seen. I don't have any sourcing on that. But I'm curious to see how that plays out. If he's on the roster, I just want to see what the playing time is going to look like, what the on-ball reps are going to look like in terms of, like, volume. Because they still have to bring Anthony Simons back. You're getting Dame back. They have guys that can handle. So just want to see what that's going to look like. And zooming out, I just gushed over the Clippers for, like, 3 minutes straight. Like, the West is strong. So there exists a world in which the Blazers have a really good offseason and they're, like, the ninth best team in the conference.
Well, it kind of ties into something I've been thinking about. Maybe we'll talk about it here real quick. I'm not sure where we're at timing-wise. But I think I like the move. Side note, Jeremy Grant, do you know where he was born?
Where was he born?
Portland.
Ah, there you go.
A little fun fact for you. But I think it's not a bad move. First off, the cost wasn't that high. And you had to do something. Having him and Hart with Dame intrigues me. You have two guys you can potentially throw defensively. I think you can get Jeremy Grant closer to the role he likes as far as on-ball reps goes, while still not necessarily having to carry the load like maybe he did in Detroit and kind of get that in between that it felt like they never really got to. It was, like, super aggressive Jeremy Grant, and then it was like, yeah, why is he in the corner? So, and you know what he can do defensively, and that's been a defender they've been looking at, trying to find that piece for a minute. So you at least solved that piece of the puzzle, and you got something moving forward, and now you can try and continue to build. It's very obvious Portland said, hey, we need to move from this, but they know they got to get something else going here soon. Because, shout out to Jason Maples, right? So he tweeted out earlier, teams figuring out being in the middle is the worst place to be in the NBA. Don't disagree with that take. I'll add, I think that teams realize that now your ceiling can't be the middle for very long. It kind of ties into what I was talking about earlier. you do not have the benefit of the doubt. Like, you have to make moves to build something, to get something going, to raise your ceiling higher. And so Portland can't just show up with Dame and dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
They got to have Dame and Jeremy Grant. And hey, we're building this. We got Shaedon Sharpe. And hey, look what we're building over here. You need to build something to open the doors for you, to get someone to answer that text, to answer that phone call. Because the movement's crazy. Like you mentioned, the West is tough. Everyone's trying to make a move right now to go somewhere. And we saw it even last year. Teams saw the Hawks make that run and were like, huh,
we could do that.
Interesting. People saw the Mavs make this run. Huh. Interesting. People see Phoenix and Utah maybe sliding backwards. See what Memphis did. Everyone's making a push. And the Clippers are going to be back. Yes. The Pelicans are coming. The Lakers, they ain't going to be 11 again, be my presumption.
Might be 10.
So it's going to be, it's fighting season. You got to at least get something in your camp to open up or extend the window. Because if you don't, other teams are going to pass you by. And those people in that locker room are going to look around and be like, hey, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. Up top is going to look at you and be like, hey, what are we doing? And it's fascinating. So I salute Portland for at least saying, hey, let's go get him. Let's move forward. And I salute Detroit because clearly that wasn't the direction they wanted to go with anymore. But that's the one thing about Detroit during this whole run. They kind of felt like they did the young guys and vets mix. And it clearly was like the vets thing isn't working. So all y'all got to go. And then they're sticking young. And that's the one thing I like. If you're going to go young, just go young. Like, you don't have to fake it. I understand that you don't want all these guys playing, need leadership. I get it. But clear the room for those guys to play and develop so you know what pieces go with you to the next level, to the next phase, to the next stage of it, if you're going to go that direction. Don't half do it. And now these guys are fighting for spots with playing time with other guys. And it's like,
what's the point?
What are we doing? Clear it out.
You know, and that was kind of just circling back to our offseason pause last year. Like, that was kind of my concern, if you remember, with Houston's draft last year. And it was like, okay, I like everyone that they drafted individually, but like, what is the playing time going to look like for these guys? Because you got two guards at the same position on top of you have Wall and you have Eric Gordon. And in the front court, you got Christian Wood and you have two guys that are probably best at the five offensively, but that's also where Christian Wood's best at offensively, but you need some defense alongside of that. And it's kind of weird. So it's like, okay, what is Shingun doing? It was a whole thing. And I was like, okay, what is this going to look like? And so, like, just to your point, like, I'm glad that, like, Detroit is not trying to have that kind of issue. Like, they seem to be clearing the room for their young guys. And I think that's a smart way to go. Just a segue and talk about clearing the room and also teams looking at certain runs and saying we can do that too. This Atlanta-San Antonio thing is interesting to me. One, the fact that DeJounte Murray can reportedly be had is not something that I expected. This is an all-star caliber guard who is, 24, 25 years old on the upswing of his career. Like, he just made his first all-star team. I think he's, like max eligible next offseason. And so I guess part of it is like maybe they want to get ahead of that. But then it's like, wait, why do they want to get ahead of that? Like, they're in the rebuild and you have an all-star 25. Like, you would think you would want to key that in. But I don't know. That's weird. But then there's Atlanta. Like, you first hear that, okay, it's going to be a John Collins-based deal. And recent report from Zach Klein, and that report has now been reiterated from, I think, Jake Fisher and also Mark Stein, where it's like, oh no, Atlanta's trying to build this out with Danilo Gallinari and a bunch of firsts. And I'm just like, wait, surely that's not all it takes to get DeJounte Murray.
That changes the math on the deal for me. I had some counters, some back and forth when this initially came out as far as the fit and everything. But if you're adding DeJounte Murray to Trae Young and John Collins, that's a little different for me. You got two ball handlers. You got defense from DeJounte. Two guys who can work screen and roll. That makes it a little more interesting in Atlanta, to where it's not just Trey pick and roll or bust. It's now, hey, we can get to a blend more organically. Mm-hmm. As far as the Spurs deal, I'm just more intrigued as to, I think I'm with you. I did not expect to see DeJounte Murray available.
Yeah.
But it kind of makes sense if you think about it, because it's going to be pay that man time.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to get the same discount, I don't think, this time around.
No, not at all. Not at all.
So if you're thinking, and it's like, hey, it's a thing that happens in the league a lot where it's like, hey, we value you and you're going to get that, but we're not going to give it to you. So let's just get ahead of this and try and get some picks and move forward. It makes a little bit more sense as to why the Spurs kept drafting all them guards in the place. I was like, wait, I get it. Y'all got it tight, but also, yeah, Lonnie Walker, okay. And now DeJounte, okay. So y'all just like, all right, we'll do some other folks.
That makes sense. Like Lonnie Walker is a restricted free agent, I believe. I don't think he's going to come back. If they're flipping DeJounte for the Gallo and picks package, which I guess we'll see. Like, hopefully we don't hop off the Zoom recording and then DeJounte's traded, because that would stink. But if that's the package, like, one, I guess I get it from that frame of mind. Like, let's get ahead of it. Secondarily to that, if you're going to do the get ahead of it trade for DeJounte and picks, like, doing it before 2023 makes sense, because next year's draft is supposed to be insane. And so if you're going to have like a tank year, or let me not say tank year, if you want to have a year where you really want Josh Primo and Trey Jones to spread their wings as ball handlers, this would make the most sense for San Antonio. Go ahead and cash in now. So cool. And on the other side, man, DeJounte in Atlanta. Trey needs that kind of guard beside him defensively more than anything. DeJounte not being tasked with being the best player on the team, I am very much in on that DeJounte Murray. And I like this DeJounte Murray. Again, he was an all-star. We talked about his all-star candidacy on the pod this season. You know, I was there. But you're telling DeJounte, hey, just be our second best player. Now the defense can ramp up even more, or ramp up the normal levels. And I say that while also acknowledging DeJounte Murray this year still led the NBA in steals. Not the premier marker of defensive aptitude, obviously. But, like, he slipped on that end this year and still led the league in steals while racking up triple doubles on the other end. But that's how good he is. If you're telling him, hey, just Trey's going to handle a lot of it, attack second side, run some early draft screens and pick and roll, get downhill or kick it to Trey and let him attack second side. Like, that's a really fun setup for him, I feel like. And if we get back to all defensive first team level DeJounte Murray as a guard defender, which he has the capability of doing, I'm in. And you're telling me it's going to cost Danilo Gallinari, depending on like what the contract guarantee is going to be for him, and first, and maybe AJ Griffin, to kind of bring that full circle from the draft discussion earlier. If that's the cost, like, yeah, I do that. That's, yeah, absolutely sign up for that. I guess just to bring it back, like, do you have any real offensive concerns for DeJounte? I think that's the primary pushback for flipping for him, period.
Offensive concerns?
Yes.
I mean, my initial one when it first came up was just the thought of, okay, how does this work necessarily? I think I said it on the draft watch party, was, is this just better DeLon Wright next to Trae Young? And you got upset and I got booed, but it wasn't necessarily disrespect. It's just like, okay, we know what DeJounte Murray can do. We know what he looks like unlocked. Can you bring that version to this offense that you currently have? Mm-hmm. How much of it is going to be spaced? Or is he going to make your handoff options pop more? Is he going to let you flow more after the initial sets? Is he going to be able to run pick and roll and have Trey off ball, maybe space in the corner? Does that open things up that way? Or is he going to be spaced and defenses are helping off? Is he going to be able to take teams to and make them not switch? Is he going to be the needle mover in that way? So I'm on the fence with it because I could see how it would work. I think having two pressure points is not a bad thing at all. I think it does make a transition to Trey off ball a lot easier and more natural. You can run more actions there. It's just, if it's winning time and it's just Trey running screens, how much value are you getting out of it? But then again, it's him attacking a screen on defense, as you stated, as opposed to other people. And it's not like they were closing out any differently. So it could get fuzzy, but I'm more on board with it than I was.
Okay. I got you. Like, DeJounte space is where it kind of gets interesting for me because he's not as, I don't know, that's part of why I go back and forth with it. Because, like, on one hand, like, with a guy with that kind of juice, like, you would think he would be a better cutter or just closeout attacker than he is. But on the other hand, like, he hasn't played with a fulcrum like Trey that feeds him heavy scrambling defense. Right? Like, he hasn't had to have that. And so I do wonder, like, if he has more of those opportunities and those windows are a little bit wider for him to attack, does he look better? Does he look more comfortable? And does this end up looking better than even the hardcore skeptics feel like it would be? And I'm not saying that's you. Just saying people that are even low, that are, like, actually low on it, more so than you just kind of questioning what that looks like.
Big skeptic?
No, no, I'm just saying, like, you had very fair questions. Like, I've seen takes that just don't like the fit, period. And so I'm saying, if Murray gets those kind of windows, does it look better than even they would anticipate? And if so, like, Atlanta's going to be tough if they were to pull that off. Also, does this just call for the offense to be more creative? Where does that go?
Hey, look, man, we're not doing Nate McMillan slander right now.
Okay,
I don't have any time for that right now in my life. Okay. Love and light. Come on. We're trying to do better in life, man.
All right. Fair enough. Well, I'll just... any closing thoughts when we get out of here?
Hey, you see what Kendrick Perkins said?
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter, we think, at SteveJones20. Please join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. If you have the capability, just search Dunker Spot, send your request. We'll get you in there. We're having fun discussions. We're having watch parties. We're now doing Twitch streams, I guess. We're gaming and stuff, so that's all fun. And that'll do it. We will catch y'all later in the week.
You wouldn't do it. We know this.